Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. You know, folks, ordinarily I feel like this would be a pretty slam dunk intro. It's Aria, Canticle of the Monomyth, so I'd probably just write something out in a quick pigeon of grad school lingo and fart-sniffing Renfair mustache enthusiast, and we'd be golden. You know, all verily doth Young's analytics prithee or whatever. But this genuinely hurt to even bother trying to keep in my head for more than a minute. So right now, between this and the norovirus, I am the dead horse, and I only have about 3 HP left. So let's roll that fucking D6 on today's System Mastery. Hello and welcome back to System Mastery, where I still have to sound smooth or else I'll just be hoarse.
Yeah, or else you'll just be a little hoarse.
Yeah, I'm running on that back register. Like John was saying in the Afterthought episode, if you haven't joined us at the $10 a month level, because I've been quite laid up with norovirus recently.
Yeah, it's been a bad time. There's definitely, I think, a full day that is just sort of seen missing from
two.
You.
There's two, yeah. I mean, I have vague recollections of trying to get a message out to you to not bother coming over and not being fast enough, but that's because literally my phone was 3 inches from my hand, which might as well have been in Narnia.
Uh-huh.
I was like, it's right there. I gotta message John.
But first I gotta talk to Mr. Tumnus.
I hate that guy.
God damn it.
He's going to betray me to the White Queen for some crappy candy or something. I don't even know.
That's the kid.
Oh, that's right. The kid does that. What does he betray everybody for? Scarves?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, like Aerosmith scarves?
Uh-huh. No, yeah. he betrays everyone so that he can have access to some teenagers with mutant powers.
Oh, okay. That's good. Yeah. I don't remember. But anyway, I've been like unconsciously sick, and I've come out the other side with basic-ass cold symptoms just to sort of like kick me in the ass on the way out. Which means I might just yell my voice out in this episode, so enjoy it.
It's possible.
If you don't get a bonus content right away, you'll know why.
Yep, it's because we couldn't record it, because Jeff's dead.
Anyway, though, we do have an announcement mastery sort of thing to begin with, which thankfully and blessedly, I'm going to have John do.
Yeah, so we got an announcement mastery, which if you want us to read something or do an announcement or whatever, you can head on over to SystemMasteryPodcast.com, go to give us some money, and get your own announcement. And this one, instead of being for a project or anything else, is just good old friend of the show, Richard Kreutz Landry.
Oh, old pal.
Good old pal has decided to let everyone know about his April Fool's Day tradition of giving money to food banks for April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
And you'll play a funny little trick on those nerds. Now they can eat.
Just play a little prank on hunger.
Yeah. Hey.
I like it.
Fuck you. Now you've got to be able to live comfortably for a little bit. Sucker.
Yeah.
Got him.
That'll show them.
Yeah.
That'll fix their little wagon, presuming that you also donate to a place that fixes wagons.
Yeah. Well, and also that they brought a wagon to get that food with.
Yes, exactly. So... you know, that's actually a very worthy and good cause.
Love that. We do love supporting various charities and things on here whenever we can. And spending a day where there's normally, like, especially for the internet, a day of just going, ha-ha, we tricked you and you don't get anything, of mm-hmm. going, instead of that, what if I trick you and you get something?
That's very good.
And that is help to people that need it.
And we're probably the right people to deliver that message. After we have been famously neutral about April Fool's Day for...
Oh, we've been famously positive on April Fool's Day.
Fully neutral. We've never pulled an April Fool's Day prank, but we're also not against them.
Every episode we've ever done that happens to come out on April 1st has always been very serious.
Legitimate business.
Very clearly normal, real things that mm-hmm. we have done episodes for.
That's correct. Yeah. So I don't know why you wouldn't turn to us as the sobering real, the face of April Fool's, a holiday, which we think is fine for others, but not for us.
Indeed.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, no specific food bank or any specific charity in mind, just this April Fool's Day, instead of, you know, seeing what design people are beta testing to see if someone will buy, go give some money and make people happy.
There's no, like, Think Geek anymore. It's all AliExpress and shit. The internet sucks.
Fucking internet's gotten terrible.
We need a new one. That's pretty much what's happened.
Yeah, we need an internet, I would say, like, 2.0.
Yeah,
like, if we could get that.
Which, I think that's happening.
Or maybe
far
if we could get an Internet of Things.
Oh, that'd be good, too. I'm just saying we need one called something else entirely. And obviously the right way to solve that is to look back into old terms for cyberpunk shit.
Uh-huh.
So we probably need something like, a metaverse, which I think is not a term anyone's using yet.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, so where we could do things like, you know, visit animals at the Meta Zoo or purchase photographs of the animals, individual photographs of the animals.
And we would own them.
Yeah, own them. And then be able to, you know, license their likeness for use in video games or cartoons.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That'd be wonderful.
That'd be a great internet.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, that announcement mastery has gone on long enough.
Uh-huh.
Let's get to, ooh, baby, what we gotta actually talk about.
Okay, if we have to. Welcome to the first half. This is a two-parter of Aria. It might be a two-parter. We're not sure. We may be so mad about this book that we're just going to say fuck it to the back half of this fucking thing. But Aria, Canticle of the Monomyth. And you may already be wondering, what do those words mean in that terrible organization?
Why would you do that? And the answer is, because why not? So this is a game, a book that was given to me by my good friend, Sydney.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, she gave this book to me and was like, you will need to do this. And I went, why is that? And then I picked it up and it was an over 500 page tome of dumb horse shit. And I went, oh, yes, we do. We do need to do this.
Yeah. And I feel like the problem is there's no way we're ever going to be able to correctly do this justice. And the reason for that is that this is basically like a black hole that exists to suck up every pretentious, stupid thing you've ever used to make fun of other role players that's ever happened.
The problem with reading this, especially just right out the gate, I mean, this is split into two books and not just two parts of the book, like book two restarts the page count over from one.
Yes, that's right. It starts in Roman numerals and then also moves into, so it's really like three books. It starts with a 30-page Roman numeral section.
Now, the 30-page opening Roman numeral section of this is, what if that first paragraph on essays you wrote in high school where you put down, in the following essay, explain this? What if that was 30 pages?
Yeah. You know how that old how to write an essay thing goes in high school? They say, tell them what you're going to tell them it, then tell them what you told them. And that's supposed to be five paragraphs. But what if instead?
What if instead it was 30 pages of, in the next two books, this is what you will find, and then tell every single thing that will be in them, then spend an entire book, the first book, split into two sections, which then does 60 pages of, hey, this is what I'm about to explain to you, and says it over 60 pages, and then the next 100 pages are, and now I'll go into explaining what I just said.
It's like watching one of those fucking time-wasting food TikToks. Where they just keep pouring more sprinkles and eggs into a waffle iron, you know? Like, this is going to be really good. This is a super secret recipe. I'm going to show you what it looks like in 7 minutes. Just keep watching those ads.
The thing is, when you first get into it, in like, you know, Roman numeral, I mean, technically, I guess page 8, uh-huh. because for some reason it doesn't even start text until Roman numeral 8, but it reads exactly like someone who is an aspiring writer that just came back from a writer's conference. They went to a weekend getaway where a writer sat there and was like, all right, now here's the thing you've got to understand about narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And then they spent 48 hours with a little notebook jotting down every dumb horseshit buzzword that this person said and then turned it into 500 pages of a role-playing game instead of the novel that they clearly want to write.
Yes. Well, I mean, to write a novel, you'd have to have some sort of idea for a story. But instead, what they have is an idea for how to write a role-playing game.
Oh, yeah. They just wrote how to write a story, the role-playing game.
Yeah. To me, like, and I'm willing to take some shit on that for not having read the back half, which I assume is where all that Furnost story stuff that's actually in here is hinted at throughout, that there's like a sort of a campaign story that's happening as we're making our way through, but it's all just in examples. But to me, I don't think you're wrong. This very much does read a little bit like grad student language or like someone who just took a writing scholarship. To me, it reads like you asked an AI, like a ChatGPT or something, to give you some pointers about how to write a role-playing game. And then instead of taking those pointers, you just published them.
It's, God, I mean,
but it's from 1992, like, though.
It would be, I don't know, more interesting if it was some weird AI generative shit, but this has the distinctive stink of someone who is like, here are my ideas on how to truly create a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it starts out with, the first thing is reforging the monomyth, and
yes.
I'm like, oh, go absolutely fuck yourself. I know that this is called Canticle of the Monomyth. I get it. But when you're like, you know, the hero's journey coined by James Joyce, and I'm like, oh, boo! Boo, go fuck yourself.
I have a
degree in literature and I hate this.
Why is it always the monomyth? No one ever wants to base anything on the thunder words.
Also, let me say this. The fact that he goes a full paragraph, named the thing after like the monomyth and the hero's journey, this setup for how the first book is basically character creation has fucking nothing to do with it. The entire idea of having this hero's journey is like, oh yeah, and then they grow and become whatever, and you're like, okay, but this is all about like building nations and like,
yeah, it's got very little to do with the actual monomyth beyond, I think, they're maybe a 1992 idea that, hey, no one's taken the famous monomyth concept and made a whole role-playing game with it as the central concept. Like, that feels to me like that was the idea behind trying to insert that in there. Because, again, you know what the fucking monomyth is. I don't need to tell you about fucking Joseph Campbell and James Joyce and shit. But it's, you know, Luke Skywalker is the monomyth. That's the storyline. And this is not that. This has nothing to, this couldn't be further from that.
God, the amount that this game is obsessed with knowing the history of your character's family and the nation that they are in and the relation that that nation has to other nations and how that your family relates to other families. I'm like, this is, again, feels like someone went, oh, if you want to write a narrative in a world, first you must create the world and then you can. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine if you want to write fucking Game of Thrones. Sure.
Yeah.
But this is an RPG. Most of the time, if someone has created their own world, you're like, great, okay, here's Fantasylandia, it's got elves, why don't you go kill a dragon?
Yeah.
And I know that they're like, yes, and I want to elevate the art form.
Yes, because that's
and
the start here.
I hate them for it.
Yeah, because it starts, I mean, let's go ahead and say, get this joke out of the way. I can think of at least one thing that the authors of this book did have in common with the master author James Joyce. In that they both enjoyed the smell of farts.
God.
But the reason I'm saying that is because the first half of this fucking 30-page intro section is about how if you follow all these rules, you'll elevate your role-playing to a truly sublime level.
I want to talk to you about meta design. It's the design within the design. You see, you're going to take my framework, and you're going to develop a framework within the framework. And within the meta design lies the narrative seed. I'm like, fuck you!
I feel like I'm once again accidentally tricked into attending a burner party.
God.
Thank you.
Damn it. I do. And then, I hate this. I'm not even out of the first two pages. It then gets into playable realism and how you have to have a real, interesting, intricate backstory with hundreds of years of history in order to make a thing that you play in be realistic. I can't buy into a setting unless I know the full mercantile history between these two nations.
I just find it funny that this basically exists as the counterpoint to that Patton Oswalt routine about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, well, you like Darth Vader, right? Oh, yeah, I love Darth Vader. He's super cool. Well, in this, he's a little kid, and he misses his mom very much. Oh, I don't fucking care about that at all. I don't want to see that. I don't want to watch that. That's not interesting.
No. And all of this, it... So in addition to the, like, this is a person that has just had a writing seminar, it also feels like the only role-playing game that I enjoy is Pendragon, because the only thing I am interested in is lineage.
Yes, primogeniture. There's so much... That's like... 90% of this book. One of my favorite little bits in here is the part where it says, like, you can use the rules contained within these pages to recreate any genre you wish, any milieu from throughout history, from fantasy to high fantasy to medieval times to dark fantasy.
Oh, God, that was my favorite sentence. I was like, dude, you can't say you can use this game to create any genre and then list fantasy four times. You cannot do that. That at least one, put any other thing.
Oh, yeah,
just one in there.
Just put one where it's just like, or even the far realms of science fiction or whatever thing that you probably find terribly distasteful.
I mean, even if you can't, at least put it in there. God.
Yeah. Like, there was one mention before it got into all the lineage shit about how maybe you come from, like, your species that you're playing, because this game has, you know, everything's built from the ground up. You from like, a eusocial hive species or something, and you're going to have to rework all the rules to fit that in. And then it never gets mentioned again, because that's not as fun as knowing all about how, like, actual Normans worked or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, the... it keeps... making me hate them for writing this. So, like, as J.R.R. Tolkien once said, I'm like,
nope,
stop it.
Nope, don't.
Stop it.
You're not allowed.
Every writer making a secondary world, a fantasy, every sub-creator hopes that he is drawing on reality. You know, the detailed Aria society creation rules. And I'm like, no, stop being up your own ass. I do not need 500 pages of this.
You may also still be wondering about Aria Canticle, where it's Aria colon Canticle of the Monomyth. So you're probably wondering what the fuck that all means, because that's just random words plucked from various sources, because one of those is music and the other one is religion.
Yep.
That's because, here's a fun thing, Aria and Canticle are in-game terms.
Uh-huh.
They're time scales.
Yeah, you can pull out to Aria time, which is all the way out where you're doing, like, nation building. We're like, oh, and then, you know, they went to war or they had this political thing, and you just do, like, you know, 15-20 years.
Yeah.
And then you can go to, like, Canticle time, where it's just years instead of, like, decades.
When you go to Canticle time, you get seated in one section of the arena, and that tells you which knight you're going to root for during the grand jousting tournaments.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, but, like, I think Canticle is the biggest one. It basically isn't really a scale of time.
No, it's the, like, scale instead of saying I have a campaign, yeah, it would be a Canticle.
A Canticle, which contains mini arias,
yeah,
which will drive anyone who knows what any of those words mean nuts.
Should also mention that a player in this is a persona.
Yes, and don't forget to tell us what the GM might be called. You daren't call them the GM.
They are not a game master. No. They are merely a myth guide. They are myth guided.
You're myth guided?
Well, it hurts.
Ow.
Aria is a game of myth making, world creation, and epic social interactions. These concepts should always remain in the forefront of the role playing experience.
Okay, so before we just go on endlessly bashing this thing for being painfully pretentious to read, I do want to get a little bit of mechanics out of the way so we can at least say we did our due diligence. The basic core mechanic of this game is called a trial.
Yes.
And every single role in this game is always called some kind of trial, and they all are treated as if it's a whole new idea. So you've got, like, attribute trials and resistance trials.
Aging trials.
Legitimacy trials, estrangement trials. But mostly they do work relatively the same way. You have a base number and you have a additive number. The base number is sometimes static and sometimes variable, which is weird because it's called a base.
Yeah, the problem is they have all of these names. You're going to do this kind of trial or this kind of trial. And I'm like, no, what you have is two different types of trials. You have an attribute trial and an expertise trial.
Yes.
Because those are either a static base added to your attribute or a variable base, depending on what you picked when you got your skill or expertise in this game, and the expertise rank.
Yes.
That's it. And those are the two versions of trials, and yet they, instead of going, you will do an aging trial, it is functionally an expertise trial. They're just like, you'll do an aging trial. Let me explain what trials are again, because
yes.
I got 500 pages to fill.
You are absolutely right. To use those, you'll take those two numbers. Often the base number would just be like a 3, but normally you assume anywhere between 5 and like 7 to 10, something like that. It doesn't matter.
I mean, for the base number, it's usually 3 to 5.
Yeah, it could be some numbers. You add two numbers together, and then you subtract a third number. That number is the difficulty. It is determined by the myth guide.
Yeah, you are... It's a D10 roll-under system.
You roll under that number on a D10 to succeed with a variable range of success based on how many points above or below a failure or success you receive.
Yeah, so let's say I've got... The standard difficulty is 2, which means you would subtract 2 from whatever your number is.
Correct.
If I'm doing a standard attribute roll, and the base number for that is 3... And let's say my attribute is 6. I would get a 9, subtract 2 for the difficulty, go to a 7. I've got to roll under a 7 in order to get a success. Now, I can roll exactly a 7. A 0 is a marginal success.
Yes.
For 1 below, you get a complete success. 5 to 9 below, superior, and so on, up to 15 below for a mythic success, and you may be thinking, Jesus, how do you get 15 below in this game?
Well, there are some ways you could potentially do it, including things like just having a supernaturally high stat value or something. That is possible. The game says normally people's stats max out at 10, but there's always exceptions made for sufficiently magical or powerful whatevers. More relevantly, though, is something that the game calls the rule of ones and tens. Thank you. I can't do voices right now. So the rule of ones and tens is a arbitrarily silly way to name something that's basically a crit system. If you ever roll a 1, you roll again, and if that number is also below the difficulty of, if you would have succeeded, then you increase the rank of success that you succeeded by one rank.
Yeah.
And you can keep rolling if you rolled another 1.
Yeah, so if I, again, in the previous example, needed to roll a 7 or less to succeed, and I roll a 1, I've rolled 6 below, which puts me at a superior success because a 5 to 9 below gives you superior.
Yes.
If I got that 1, I would roll again. If that was also a 7 or less, I would bump it up to the next level, which would be an extraordinary success. If that was a 1, I could roll again. And if that also was 7 or below, I could get to mythic.
Now, if it was not, you wouldn't fail. You just stop at extraordinary success.
Yeah. Now,
it also works in reverse.
Yeah. Now, if I did have the roll the 1, get the superior success, and then roll a 10, I would be like, all right, well, I just get the regular success I had.
That is correct.
I don't
get
anything.
It only works in reverse if you roll a 10 in the first place, because you can just endlessly compound your failure into that supreme and utter failure.
Yeah.
The kind that only, like, ever happens to Cobra Commander.
And no matter what, the difficulty can only get down to a 1, and your actual stat can only be up to a 10.
Yes.
So even if I'm like, oh, my stat's 14, and I've got plus 3 from the base, like, great, yours is 10. Like, you cannot get anything beyond that.
It's got to keep the fact that you're rolling a D10 relevant at all.
Yes. Which is sad, because I'm like, yeah, but if I do have that, that's the one chance I could have for, like, big successes.
Yes. The only chance you actually have for big successes is rolling ones.
Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, well. But yeah, a D10 roll-under system that, for the most part, like, you should be rolling generally, if you got a decent stat, probably about a little bit better than 50-50. You should probably be about a 60% chance.
You know, that's relatively close to a good range. I like 65 to 70% personally as my range of success for players.
Yeah, I like 75% and above that if there's something that you've really invested in.
Yeah, 65 to 70 is just my base out the gate roll. That's where I like it.
Yeah.
But I know that makes me feel like I'm a big cheapo baby who needs training wheels on my game, but no, I just find success is more interesting than failure most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I'm failing on something, I it's because I better have a damn good story on the other side of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's why games that have the whole, like, oh, when you do this, you don't just fail, instead something interesting happens, are so much better, because every time you're like, well, I invested in this, and what do you know? I failed at it, and I'm a big dumb idiot, I guess. Fuck me, I suppose.
Yeah. Now, does this game do that? I don't know, because it's very obscure how any of these mechanics are actually going to work in practice. Mostly, this chapter is given over to constantly exhorting you to think back and reflect upon the lands in which your family was first born and developed. Or did they come here from exotic faraway lands, and do they still have traces of that heritage? And also, what order were you born in? Because that's really fucking important. We got to know that.
Man, there is... The second book of this is supposed to be
the world-building
myth creation.
Guide, yeah.
And it's, you're like, oh, myth creation, great, this is for the myth guide. But instead it starts with, like, combat and has rules for the magic system, which is wild that you would put that, like, I guess maybe combat go in there, but the magic system you'd think would be like, oh, I wanted to make a wizard. You think you would put that in the player section.
Yeah, no.
But the fact that this book really, and like a lot of books that we've seen, is like, hey, if you're the person running this, be ready. You have 10 hours of homework ahead of you, at least, in order to even begin to get someone else to make a character in this.
Yes.
Because they're like, oh, well, of course, this whole game is about creating a game. So there is no, like, all right, well, if you're an elf, you have this. And they're like, but what does an elf mean to you? That will be up to the myth guide. And truly, of course, you'll have to create the land of the elves and what the elves traded with the dwarves. And do the elves have a different build value? What is their physique ranking? And you're like, okay. You have to come up with all of that before one player can go, I am an elf. What does that mean?
What are their heritage, renown, background elements? Do they have any vocations? Do their vocational skills have greater internal or external potential?
What sort of renown would you have as an elven bard in the lands outside of elves on a scale of 1 to 10? And you're like, what? Why? What? I just want to make an elf with a lute. Too fucking bad.
Well, I don't think
the GM or myth guide has to do 12 hours of prep work for you to even start to make that elf.
Yeah, but don't worry, because when they're done, you'll never have a more richer or rewarding experience playing an elf than knowing that 3,000 years ago, one elf was pretty good with the guitar.
I have such a rich role-playing experience because I know that this loot was bought wholesale from the human kingdom, and our family got a very good deal on it, you see, because the exchange rate between elf and human money, and you're like, no one cares. This has never helped role-playing.
Does it help you to role-play your character if I tell you that only 0.25% of elves can reach the frame ranking of Burly?
It does. Thank you.
It's just so, overly layered. We've talked about before, like, I think when we were reading through the GURPS master book, because we read, like, the final fourth or fifth edition of whatever it is of GURPS, where it felt like they just took 15 or 16 GURPS books and just put them all in there.
Yep.
Regardless of whether or not that was duplicating or doubling up on very similar rule structures.
Uh-huh.
So it felt like just reading an endless pile of the same shit. Well, this is not that. This is a whole singular creation, and it reads like that somehow anyway. Because there are multiple times when you can choose to make your character, for example, just say, generous. You want your character to be generous? Well, that can be a trait. It can be a renowned trait. It can be a heritage trait. It can be a vocational trait. It can
be your family's trait.
Family's trait, in which case it could be a positive or negative family trait, whether generosity is something that they're lauded for or something that has caused them ruin in the past.
It is. It's also, there is, in the making a character section, they're like, oh, there's two ways you can make a character. One is, do whatever the fuck you want. Put whatever numbers you want anywhere as long as it goes within the system. Live your best life, you. And then the other one is, and now here's rules for how to do point allotment with five different charts and different points depending on what type of game you're playing. And of course, you'll need to spend fewer points in the early years of your life because you can't spend those points yet because you're not smart enough to spend points.
Yeah, because you're like, oh man, it's so confusing. Making a character takes forever. I mean, it feels like it's not as bad as it seemed like when I was going into it, but I'm just sure I just did it wrong. Because there's all this stuff about like, oh, between the ages of 0 and 12 relative to the equivalent age range, because you're supposed to multiply whatever actual age range you pick for whatever creature you're playing as until it's equivalent to a human age range. And then you can only spend like 1 point per year on each of three vocational blocks because you're a little kid, so you're only learning like basic aptitudes.
Yeah, it doesn't come with hard and fast rules for a lot of stuff in this. So they're like, oh, if you're in the child development stage of making your character, depending on what family background you have. So if it's like, oh, are you from like the ruling class or are you from the professional class? Are you marginal or privileged? And all of those are like, okay, well, that's going to change how many skill points you can have in a thing during your childhood. But then there's no section for when does that end. It just goes, hey, who knows? Maybe you are a quick learner and you came of age at 11. Or maybe you're like nobility and you stop getting pampered at like 15 or something. And I'm like, no, you're giving me points to spend. I need to know. Yeah. Quit giving the GM homework.
See, now what I thought you were going to be talking about when you said that there's like a couple ways to build characters was that the game encourages you to try three different methods of play. One of them being individual characters, where you just play as a person and you do a story about that person and their life. Then you have perpetual genealogies.
Yep.
Which is where you play as a family lineage until it dies, and then you create another family lineage and just keep playing alongside the other players who still have family lineages that are following, where you basically dip out into Aria time and progress the world through wars and stuff, and then zoom back in on the new heir of the legacy.
Yeah, you basically do this sort of Pendragon thing where you're like, all right, well, I've got my like coat of arms, and I do whatever as a knight, and then my kid takes over, and you're like, okay. Great.
And then the last one being like eternal presence, where you're playing as like gods who walk among men and are eternal, so you can play as a single character at eternal scale.
Less that and more, you're playing as the idea of something.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
You're not like, oh, I'm an immortal that keeps coming back to do the same thing, but just I am playing the archetype of the conqueror. So like, oh, every however long in this kingdom, someone will show up and try to conquer it because that is the cycle of this monomyth, I guess, is that every 400 years someone tries to conquer the kingdom, and then you create the conqueror, and they always have a different name, but you're basically playing a type.
Prince Lotor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They always have a different name, and that name is always Prince Lotor.
You gotta open wide your gates and welcome your conqueror.
So the game gives you a number of points to spend. It's point by...
Yeah.
For your character, and you get points based on
two
your
factors,
age.
Yes. And so, also the strength of the campaign.
Well, yes. So you get a number of points per year of the character, and you will either get 5, 7, or 9, depending on how powered up you want it to be.
Right.
But there's also just no starting age. So if you're like, oh, I guess I'll be, I don't know, 35 and take 7 times 35. You're like, great, you have a shitload of points to spend.
Yep.
And then if you go, oh, we're doing the hero's journey, right? I'm going to be fucking Luke Skywalker or whatever. Great, I'm 19. Oh, well, you suck.
Yeah,
you just suck worse.
Like, you're supposed to be in your like mid-20s or something, because that way you've gone through all your vocational training and everything. Like, I guess you could play through the process of it. It certainly does have those mechanics.
Yep.
So you can be like, well, your hero's journey begins with a 3-year apprenticeship in a silversmith's office.
God, that is, again, for a game that calls itself Canticle of the Monomyth and starts talking about the hero's journey, this game is like, now obviously you'll have a vocational window where you'll be able to do an internship. Now, of course, 7 years is the standard medieval time that you would be in an intern, and then at that time you would be able to build your own renown as your own silversmith. Now, of course, you'll need to purchase your... I'm like, what the fuck does this have to do with a hero's journey? Am I denying the call because someone was like, can I get a ring? And I went, no.
I'm just pretty sure that Canticle of the Heraldry Dweeb wasn't going to sell as well.
Ugh. And...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The game has a thing called Windows of Opportunity.
Oh, yeah, Windows of Opportunity, where you have a chance to go, like, off your beaten path during character creation.
It has no rules. It's just, hey, Windows of Opportunity are, there are three types, situational, vocational, and developmental. All of those mean basically the same thing of just, you can use a window to change your status. And they essentially let you go like, oh, if I wanted to say my kid grew up like an orphan, so for the first, I don't know, 14 years of life, I build them as if they are in the marginal category, but then I'll use my situational window of opportunity and say they get adopted by royalty, so now I'm in the ruling class?
I think my favorite usage of it is when you use your window of opportunity to just have a growth spurt and get like 4 inches taller or whatever.
Yo, I'm big. I got yoked. I started doing CrossFit.
I started drinking milk.
And one of them, the vocational one, is just, oh, you decide I wanted to be a silversmith. And then you go, 4 years into it, I use my opportunity window to go, no, I don't want to do that. That was dumb.
You can do that, or you can use it to get out. You can be like, oh, I completed my masterwork project early, I guess.
Yeah, I'm no longer an intern for 7 years. I'm out and doing my own thing.
Yeah.
Which is wild, because I'm like, but why do I need a window of opportunity to say a thing that happened to my character? All of them are just like, if I want my background to be, I was an orphan, like an urchin of the street that got adopted by royalty, then I could just say that. Why do I need a window of opportunity, which I apparently get three of? One of each?
But maybe. We don't know how they are. They seem to just be doled out by the myth guide.
Yeah, again, it is a thing of, I don't know, here's a suggestion, you figure it out.
Yeah. So we're just genuinely unsure as to how that functions. But yeah, it just seems largely like the writers are so kind of wrapped up and entrenched in either, I'm genuinely unclear on this game, whether this is coming from someone who was like, I could do better than D&D, or whether they had never heard of a role-playing game before. it could literally be either one. This might be that rare occasion. Like, even fucking like fantasy wargaming, the highest level of all, was written out of direct spite for D&D, right? Like, they knew what D&D was. This might be some, like, Blue Lagoon shit. Like, they might just be full first principles on their own. But
I mean, it very much feels like someone who, the type of person who is like, oh, when I ran my D&D game, I, of course, had my own maps, and every nation was fully mapped out and had a complete background. I had 20 pages of history on each one of the various nations, and if you told me you were making a character from there, you had to tell me exactly how you interacted with it.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is, because I can't be sure which way it goes, I'm not sure if they were steeped in that 80s culture of like, oh, if we let you make an interesting character, that's an aggressively, dizzyingly high privilege that we can only afford our most trusted of associates. Everyone else must play a dirt farmer named Sven.
Except this game is like, oh, if you want to, you could just give yourself tens and everything if it makes sense for the story.
And then it has a section for the myth guide that's like, yeah, make sure you read over everyone's sheet and give them some hell if they like give themselves ridiculous stats. They should be a regular person.
Well, it's mostly, though, that wouldn't be interesting. The only thing I want out of here is an interesting story.
Yeah.
Literally, this is just someone who should have been going, oh, I wanted to write a guide on how to write a book, and I couldn't do that, so instead I made a RPG out of it.
Right. So, okay. I do want to mention that this game has attributes, and it's got an interesting take on them.
That is one of the more interesting things in here.
I would say, if I didn't hate this just viscerally in general, I would actually call this out as fairly interesting. There are 16 fucking attributes, but you only pick 6 of them to bother with. All the others are automatically set to the high average, like above average for everybody else in the world, of 5.
Yeah. So everything attribute-wise is going to go essentially between 5 and 10. You can take a, like, pick a stat and have a disadvantage in it and go lower for some extra points.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you're going to have average everything, and then six out of these stats will be more than that. You don't technically have to. You do have to pick six, but of those, you could leave one at five and just go, I'm not spending any points on it. It's fine. But it is one of my six, so I can raise it later.
Yeah.
Because all of them have, after you get whatever your initial rank in it is, all of them then have a maximum potential. Most of them are a plus two. So if you're like, oh, I start out and I have a seven, then the max I could ever raise this to is a nine.
Yes.
Some are higher. Much higher.
Yeah, wisdom in particular can get to plus four.
Yeah, wisdom and endurance are the two that you can get to plus four.
Yeah, and then there's at least one or two that can get to plus three. So yeah, there are a few that you can raise up.
But there are a lot of things that are definitely overlapping concepts where you'd be like, yeah. All right, so endurance and hardiness are both two different things.
Yes. Quickness and agility.
Intelligence, intuition, and logic are all three separate things. And you can have presence, appearance, empathy, like all of these things that are sort of tied-ish together.
Yeah.
And
it, what's weird is that then when you go through and you use them for the only thing they're really there in the game for, which is to help you build your trial numbers.
Yeah,
based on your disciplines or skills effectively.
Yeah.
Most of them are like, well, you can use the one that seems obvious, like if you're trying to do brawl.
Yeah, you have to use one of them.
Yeah.
All of the expertises in this have one talent that is like, okay, you have to use this stat.
Yes.
And then a list of other stats that you can pick two more from.
Uh-huh. So if it's like brawl, it'd be strength, but maybe it's quickness or maybe it's endurance or something. But then it's always also like logic, intuition, and reason.
Every fucking one of these expertises, I was like, when I was making my character first, I was like, oh, well, I'll have these stats. These seem kind of interesting. And those will probably be good for the kind of expertises that I want to do. You know, I'm looking to do, say, like a physical thing. And you would think that the expertise that is just called physical would be like, yeah, dude, great. But it's like, influencing people is based on intelligence and wisdom and perception.
Yeah.
Also, you have 15 stats, but technically you have 16 because charisma is a derived stat from your other stats, which also includes your wisdom and intuition.
That's right, yeah. And there's also faith, but that only and insight, but those only matter if you're using the game's reality warping magic system.
Yeah, I mean, technically, I guess you could have a faith score without having faith magic.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter. But
in fact, one of the example characters does.
Yeah.
One of the example characters is heavily invested in a faith score, despite coming from a system where it doesn't do anything, just because they were very into role-playing the character concept and being like, oh, she needs to have ironclad faith. She's some sort of Inquisitor knight. I mean, I tried to keep reading the examples as I made my way through, because they were probably the most, like, solid thing to grab onto in here, you know?
You're like, okay,
how did you do it?
Give me some idea of what you think this should look like.
Unfortunately, 90% of the time, they're just written like this guy was trying to rewrite Beowulf.
Ah.
So they're always just shit like, well, this guy, he's the firstborn son, so when his father died, he left him the contents of his war closet, which are detailed in the following. 3 banners, 4 well-sewn tabards.
Oh god, I'm looking at that character right now.
2 pikelets, 1 axe donated to him from a Firnost clan head. And you're like, I don't fucking care. I just tell me some character shit. We can get to the story stuff later.
It is so weird.
Especially when you tell me the guy gets like 4 spears. I'm like, dude, I would rather know what one spear does than know how many spears this guy gets.
Yeah. It, again, for a game that's like, yeah, the monomyth. I'm like, none of this is the monomyth. All of this is like the medieval fucking simulator.
Yeah, it's Pendragon again. But less interesting, because at least that's written by a really good writer.
At least that is like, and we have a grounded idea of Arthurian legend to go off of.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just, I don't know, it's random medieval simulator, but however you want it to be. I didn't provide you anything.
Yeah, to me, this is like whenever I walk by one of you guys, because by you guys, I mean you and the people in your home, minus the child, and you're playing like some Crusader Kings bullshit. And I'm like, ugh, how come your horse is a senator? And they're like, ah, it's medieval, don't worry about it. Like, yep, thumbs up. That looks exactly like this does to me.
I feel about this and games like that where they're like, I give you the framework to create your own world, where I'm like, this is why I don't like Hot Pot or those places where they're like, cook your own steak. Fuck you. I came to a restaurant. You make me food. I don't make me food. I pay you to make me food.
See, I can disagree with you on Hot Pot because it's like impossible to fuck up. You just put it in the soup for like 5 seconds. But I am with you on the steak one. I'm not that good at grilling steaks, so I don't want to fuck up a steak for $50.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't need to pay you a ton of money for the ability to use your grill.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Like, for me, it's more like, I feel about this the way I do about going to a concert and the lead singer's like, and now I'm pointing the mic at you. And I'm like,
you sing the song.
I'm like, I didn't pay $250 to sing this fucking song. I can do that in my car.
Yeah. This may be just a problem with framework things, but I feel like even in ones that are like generic systems like GURPS, at least when it comes in and goes, hey, this is a generic thing and I want you to use these tools to create whatever, the tools make an amount of sense. There is some purpose behind them, and you can do more than fantasy, dark fantasy, medieval fantasy, or high fantasy.
Yes.
And this one is just, it just keeps feeling like, I don't know, I thought it would be good if you made decisions. You make them, though.
Yeah.
I don't want to make decisions.
I have provided you an infinite dizzying array of decisions by merely giving you no actual information.
You may allow a character to have a family. Yeah, I didn't need your permission to that. Give me a concrete rule somewhere.
It's kind of like getting one of those like mystic Sifu type guys in a movie where you're like, oh, can you give me some of your ancient wisdom? And they just keep saying tautologies, you know? Yeah. It's just like, ah, what you seek is seeking you. And you're like, ah, come on, man.
The circle comes around and finds itself whole. Fuck you.
Do you have any concrete advice?
Yes, when the hand claps, then the sound reaches your ear. No, wait, that's just a... What?
That's a Cohen.
What? No, stop it. Stop everything.
Did I put too many dots in you?
Yes, I'm 5 dots and now I'm useless. Damn it. Son of a bitch. I am a god and now you're not allowed to use me.
That was a White Wolf joke for folks at home.
Yep.
Or in your cars. Where you could be singing along to a song right now and save yourself several hundred dollars.
You could be.
By switching to Geico.
So, yeah, the book mostly will have you get your attributes, use those attributes on your expertises that you can do, which will be in 3 categories. So the categories are talents, which are things you can just sort of do. They're like, oh, you know, brawling or talking to people, things that you don't need to be trained in. So those are ones where you're like, oh, you can always put points in those when you're a kid. Because you're like, oh, I just learned how to, like, dodge or be aware of things. It's not like I had to get book learning for it. There's aptitudes.
Uh-huh, which are a little book learning.
Yeah, they're like, oh, well, this is like animal handling.
Actually,
or diplomacy.
That's like all book learned. That's like educated skills. The difference between that and the third one, which I think is...
Disciplines is all book learning.
It's not just all book learning. It's also you have to choose a specialization. So with the disciplines, you're supposed to be like, oh, there are things like languages and stuff like that, because you have to choose which one. So each one of those also can be taken multiple times, choosing things over and over again.
Yeah, so you'll get... Like, the disciplines are things like history or knowledge or lore. So
exactly.
You're like, all right, I have the history of this country or this specific time period.
Yeah. So you can pick them more than once and apply it to multiple topics. Also, they all cost different amounts when you're building your character. So you got to definitely keep that 1 out of 500 pages open that's got the cost analysis on it, because even though they keep reprinting the information about what the skills are and how they work and what they look like, they print the prices for them precisely once.
Yeah, once in the section where you aren't building your character yet.
Yes.
But talents all cost 1 apiece, even up to 10 ranks. I think aptitudes cost one apiece up to rank 6, and then they start costing increasingly more.
Yeah, they go up by double cost. And then
I think disciplines you can get up to rank 4, and then they cost more at 5.
Yes, that is correct.
So you can always buy a few points in this for fairly cheap if you want to just get a few points in a lot of stuff. And as we mentioned, they all have a primary stat, and then you pick 2. So if I want to be good at dodging, agility is the main one. I have to use my agility as one of the 3 stats to get my base. Then I can pick from quickness, intuition, wisdom, and intelligence. And I take 2 of those, add them to agility, then divide that number by 6 and round up, and it becomes the base number that I will then add on to I'm rolling.
Yeah, the number of ranks that you have, and then you're going to subtract the difficulty and then roll a d10 to get under that number.
Yeah, so if I've got enough ranks to get to, you know, a base 4, and I bought 4 ranks, then I would get to an 8, and then I'd probably subtract 2 for a regular difficulty, and I'd have to roll a 6 or less.
There you go, and that's how you do stuff.
That's the base mechanic for most things. There are, they have like, oh, if it's an opposed roll, then it'll be who got the most under something for like the most success, or it might be do a bunch of rolls and whoever gets the most successes over X amount of rolls gets to win. So any of the opposed ones have a couple ways you could do them.
Normally you just do, you check to see that you both succeeded, and then you compare who succeeded by more.
Yeah.
And that's how you win an opposed roll.
Sometimes they'll be like, oh, if you want to, you can do a check and then have that affect the difficulty of someone else's check. If you're trying to be like, oh, I get in the way of someone when they try and do an action, if you want to hinder them.
Yeah.
But it's for the most part, just take your base, take whatever number, roll under that minus, you know, the difficulty.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, it's not that complicated, I guess. You also have the traits system. Anytime you see a big list of something in this book, you know you're in for a world of skipping pages, because basically it'll be like, traits, these are just sort of like things that are about your character, you know? And they're paired. So it'll be things like generous / stingy and pious / atheist.
Yeah, I'm brave or cowardly. Shit like that.
You got it. Well, you think, okay, well, I know what these words mean, because I'm a grown adult who has written, or who has managed to read 170 pages into this 500-page book. Surely you will not now dedicate the next 40 pages to painstakingly explaining what every one of those words means.
Ah, good. I'm glad you have told me what wise is.
Mm.
Or otherwise.
Yeah, because the opposite of wise is otherwise.
Uh-huh.
Different wise, as it's known.
Uh-huh. Penny wise, as it is known.
Everyone knows the opposite of Pennywise is a big turtle.
Everybody knows the opposite of Pennywise is Dollarwise.
Dollar
My
foolish.
New clown, Dollarwise.
How is he not Dollar Foolish? I mean, it's Pennywise Pound Foolish, so I mean,
yeah. Well, that would be if I was British.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and obviously that monster doesn't stalk the mini sceptered isles.
Also, now making Pound Foolish the British clown that kills children. Fuck, God damn it. Now I have to. Son of a bitch.
You
ruined
your character.
My life.
It's okay. You still get to pick your system.
But yeah, this book has the problem of going on.
It does.
Just being like, here's a list of 70 different words of descriptors. Now I will spend 40 pages on it.
Yeah. This book made me feel like AD&D did a good job with having a reasonable number and descriptions of pole arms. This one adds like at least 2 extra E's to the word pole arms, divides them up into 6 sections. It's insane.
And of course, they're like, now all of these personality traits will be used on, you can use them as a motivation or an obsession, or they could be any of these various personality things, a passion that you have. And what does all of that mean? It's all just you should roleplay that. And if you do, the myth guide will give you a cookie at the end. And by that, I mean a myth point.
Yes. That's literally what it means. There's no like guidance. There's no roles you need to make. I think
we recently did a game where it had the whole you have obsessions and passions and whatnot. and it was also done poorly, but at least it mechanically did something, whereas this is just, I have a motivation of generosity. What does that mean? It means if I give some money away during the session, the MG will give me something.
Yeah, like it's basically, and it keeps saying during that section, like, this is going to be an extremely useful tool for your role-playing, because you'll remember your character is jealous, 8.
I'll look down, see that my character is vulgar, and go, yes, I should say piss.
That's a much better role-playing experience for me. I can really taste the aging.
I could really taste the piss.
This role-playing has legs growing down the sides of the glass.
Just like,
piss. Yeah, it's like saying bowling would be better if you imagined those kid bumpers were in.
Ah.
I don't need fucking to write down an 8 on my sheet to know that my character is unbearably jealous. That was the whole point of making him in the first place.
Yeah, if it's a thing that I have written down that then never comes up, it turns out I didn't give a shit about that aspect of my character.
Yeah.
That's not a Sentinel's story character and you, I wanted to tell.
Yeah, like it's a Sentinel's character where you end up with an accent like a D6 and something that you're just like, I had a spare D6. I don't know. I guess my character can hover. It doesn't come up often. It's fine. You can discard it because that game works that way. And this one, you end up with like these hanger-ons. They're supposed to remind you that you're sometimes gregarious, but not very.
But I mean, at least in the Sentinels one, you're like, I can hover. Cool. That means I can describe myself as doing that.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like, I am rash. I guess I'll...
What, gym rash?
Scratch. Anyway. I think...
You want to be done? Can we be done?
I think I want to be done.
If you
want to
do the bonus content tonight, we have to be done, because I'm running on fumes. It hurts up here.
Great. We are, of course, going to do bonus content unless Jeff passes out right here.
I'm not
going to
pass out. I'm just going to lose my voice entirely.
Yeah. If you want bonus content where we have gone through this painful ass process to make characters in Aria, Canticle of the Monomyth, you can head over to patreon.com/systemmastery. Support us at the $2 a month level, unlocks years of bonus content where we have made tons of characters, and it gets you all of our stuff on a single RSS feed with no commercial interruptions.
Yeah. If you want to find out whether jumping through infinite hoops over the course of about an hour, painstakingly flipping back and forth through this giant book, resulted in characters that are more role-playing and more interesting than, say, for example, those two goobers we made in that Vietnam game we made one time.
Yeah.
Then, by all means, support us and find out. Although, I will also just tell you, no.
No, we did not make Scarecrow and the Penguin again.
So please come join us. I really hope you do. I'm sorry, I probably peaked when I yelled no at the microphone. That's my fault.
And of course, it helps the show out, lets us keep doing what we're doing. There's tons of levels you can also support us at from there. All of them unlock more bonus content. All of them also give you access to special colors and rooms and things on our Discord, where you can come and talk to other people that are super cool, very chill. And you can find us on Twitter at System Mastery.
They're exceptionally chill, and they're also somewhat A-state.
Good. Great.
Thank you.
We've covered other games we've reviewed.
We've covered a lot of games.
So many games.
I've had to switch into a silly voice. That's all I have left now.
Now I'm pound foolish. I'm gonna get you, kids.
Hey!
Oh, bothery do, or whatever the fuck.
Dorp, dorp, Reginald.
Deep dop. I'm coming to get you. I've transformed into the queen.
Damn it, I gotta get off the mic. All right, that's it. Patreon.com/systemmastery. Thanks so much for supporting us, and have a good one.
Welcome to Character Creation Cast, a show where we create and discuss characters, the best part of role-playing games, with guests using their favorite systems. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Bolter.
And I'm your other host, Amelia Antrim. Join us as we sit down with game designers, podcasters, and fans of games as we dive into learning about different RPGs through the lens of character creation. It's a combination of character building, player advice, game design insights, and even a little bit of fan fiction for a different game every month. We tackle a variety of new and old games, both well-known and indie-produced titles.
We learn how creating characters can tell us a lot about the games themselves. Check us out today anywhere you can get podcasts or on the One Shot Podcast Network at oneshotpodcast.com.